The views and opinions of shows on KCNR are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff, management, or advertisers of KCNR Radio.
Sitting on a bar stool, kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice filled the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson. It's a wave on a dusty road. It's a logger's heavy load. It's a cattle on the hill. It's a range full of thrills. It's a way of life. Settles in your soul.
Yes, it does. It settles in your soul. Good morning, everyone. This is Terry Raposo. I'm here with our producer, Travis. How are you, brother?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm good.
And this is Jefferson State of Mine, M-I-N-E. We're broadcasting live from KCNR in downtown Reading, 1460 AM, 96.5 FM, where the music sounds better. Your talk radio. You can hear us streaming live, KCNR1460.com. We're also podcasting. You can get this in our archive later on down the road simply by looking for KCNR1460.com. Anything as far as Jefferson State of Mine, M-I-N-E, goes, you can look us up on Facebook. If you use your search engine, you'll find us on Apple Podcast. We do podcasts on Mountaintop Media once a week. Those are also archived, and you can find them on Facebook. Just simply use your search engine to look for Jefferson State of Mine. Remember, it's M-I-N-E, not M-I-N-D. And you'll be able to find that. I'm here this morning with a good friend who's running for supervisor for District 5 in Shasta County, Chris Kallstrom. How are you, brother?
Good. Good morning, Terry. Good morning, Jefferson.
It's good to have you here. The last time you were in here, we were doing the radio program together.
Just like old times.
Just like old times, yeah. Anyway, we're pretty excited about this. Chris, there's a lot of people listening here that may not know who you are, so maybe give a little background on who Chris Kallstrom is.
Yeah, I was born and raised right here in Shasta County. Lived here pretty much my whole life. The decade of the 90s, we moved down to Sacramento County for ex-wife schooling. One thing led to another, kind of got stuck down there for about 12 years. Got back up here at about 2000, 2001. Been here in Cottonwood ever since. You know, it's my home. It's where I belong. It's where I was born. So, do we have a problem with the sound?
We have a problem with the sound here. Guys, we have a problem with our sound here. So don't worry about it. There, that's better.
There we go.
Jim, don't touch anything.
Yeah, quit touching buttons.
Quit touching buttons, man. Okay.
So
we have Travis there, brother. Thank you, Jim, for whatever you fixed. I know you fixed something for us. Thank you, buddy.
Yeah.
Anyway, go ahead, Chris.
So anyways, yeah, I spent the decade of the 90s down in Sacramento County. Got back home. And I've been here ever since, and like I said, this is where I was born and raised. I've noticed in the last 20 years since I've been back, 20-plus years, it seems to start reminding me of the Sacramento County I could not wait to get out of and get away from. You know, the crime, the homelessness, the graffiti, the problems. It's just, it's like, this is not the home I grew up in. This is not where I was born. You know, this county has gotten away from being run by the people, you know, and so I want to help bring that back and bring it back to the people where it belongs. The people should be controlling this county. We answer to we the people. You know, that's the most powerful group in the whole nation is we the people. It's hard to believe sometimes. It's hard to remember sometimes because we've gotten so far away from that, but I want to bring that back. And, you know, I think Patrick uses the line, but I actually had said the line earlier. It's like a supervisor's job is actually pretty easy if you do it the right way because we live in a constitutional republic, representative republic. So you elect representatives to represent you. Those representatives are supposed to do what you want them to do. So as a representative, if you're elected, you know, the decisions are fairly easy to make. You do what the people want you to do as long as it doesn't go outside of the Constitution. You know, Hatchet Ridge Wind Project, perfect example.
Yeah, good example.
You know, it wouldn't be in my district, District 5, but it's in District 3, but those people are absolutely against it. Now, had those people been absolutely for it, simple solution, vote for it. If they're absolutely against it and you're representing them, vote against it. And I'll give the board, you know, with the exception of one, they did the right thing. They voted against the wind project. Everybody was against it. And then you have to wonder, well, why did the one vote for it? You know, it's not even his district. Why did he vote for it? Well, he voted for it because there was special interest money involved that went to him, so he voted for it to keep some
special
interest.
And who was that?
Well, you know.
Was that Leonard Modi?
You know, I believe.
It's public record.
It rings a bell. Yeah, so I mean, and that's an example of what we've gotten to this point now, where we have elected representatives voting on behalf of their donors rather on the behalf of their constituents. I mean, that should have been a 5-0 vote. Very simple. There was nobody other than a handful of people that were for that project. You know, constituents were absolutely against it.
Yeah, you know, as you were saying, you have a district, but still. Each supervisor with 5 is 20% of the vote.
Yep.
So all these votes affect everybody. That's why I believe it's really important for everyone to know every candidate in every district.
Absolutely.
And I know if people support a certain candidate in a district that isn't theirs, they should support that candidate. What do you think is your top priority in coming in to this realm? What's your top priority? What do you think is or maybe the top three and
yeah,
go,
I mean,
go
the top,
3-1, yeah.
The top priority, and I think they're all tied in together, the top priority is crime and the lack of punishment. That ties in with the homeless problem. We definitely have a homeless problem, and you know, as I've stated before, there's, in my opinion and what I've been taught and what I've learned is there's two very distinct groups of homeless. So there is homeless people that, you know, want help, need help, and there's a lot of help for them, and I'm all for helping those people get back on their feet, getting programs, getting them in a program, getting some affordable housing, whatever it takes to get those people that truly want to get back into society.
That want to be helped.
Absolutely. And they're that group of people, we want to help, we want to get them help, and there is programs already in existence for them.
I think that's a great point when you bring up crime. Because after all, well, the facts are that 70% of the homeless are on drugs.
Correct. And I would say 100% of the transients are on drugs. So the homeless population, if you include transients in there, well, then,
right.
You know, then 70% probably plays a fact.
Right.
But, you know, when I found out that there was open beds down at the Good News Rescue Mission, I'm thinking, well, wait a minute. How is there open beds? How is there open space available? And these people are sleeping on the street. Well, you have to go by the rules. You can't go in there drunk. You can't go in there high. You can't go in there, you know, under drugs. So, and if you don't want to follow those rules, well, then you can't go into their program. And yeah, they're a faith-based program. You know, you can use the argument that, you know, you don't want religion pushed on you, but I don't think that's the problem. I think the problem is, there's a huge part of that population that's on drugs, not going to change, you know, I actually talked to a pastor who works with the homeless. Pastor's one of the older churches here, and he works with the homeless and the drug addicted. And, you know, he brings them in, and before he preaches to them, he tries to, you know, get them off the drugs and help them that way, counsel them that way. But he told me, you know, he says, well, you might be surprised. He says, but I'm all for 30-day jail sentences. I'm all for sending these people to jail. He goes, it gives them a chance to go to jail, clean out their system, get the drugs out of the system, and then you can offer them help. With a clear mind, you can offer them more help. They may be more receptive to it. And this is a pastor that works with homeless folks, you know, which he thought I'd be kind of surprised that he felt that way. Now, he is absolutely against, you know, long prison terms for some dude that, you know, sold a little bit of pot sometime. And I'm against that too. So, you know, it's kind of funny. I mean, you talk to people and you see their points of view and they might think they're kind of fringe, but actually, no, I agree with that 100%. I mean, but we have no jail beds. You know, we have shelter beds. We have no jail beds.
Would you be in favor of building in a jail?
I'd be in favor of building a new jail, increasing the existing jail. If whatever would be the cheapest solution to the problem, I mean, we definitely have a problem. We have some, outer jails, some outer camps that we've closed down. There's programs we've closed down. I mean, there's things that we've done, and we just keep going backwards. We keep getting deeper and deeper into the hole and causing a bigger and bigger problem. So, I from what I understand, there's another $30 million grant out there that we haven't even brought to the Board of Supervisors because they shot down the first one, so they haven't even brought up the second one. And it's like, you know, our state put us in a bad position with Prop 187 or Prop. What is it, 189?
109.
There we go. There's so many props, you can't keep them straight. But they put us in a bad position with that and filling our jail up with convicted, you know, felons that should be in prison. But you know, as bad as they are and as bad as they've caused the problem, they have actually tried to help with some solutions, and we've turned them down. And, I mean, that makes, again, no sense to me whatsoever. I guess, you know, like everything else, probably follow the money. There's probably some reason that it was turned down, but I can't for the life of me figure out why. We have a problem, there's a solution, and we don't want the solution.
Yeah, you know, and that's a great point. You know, I know that that Patrick Jones has always stated that there's money in the budget, and the budget right now is a bit of a cluster. From yeah. You're smiling. So
I got in front of me. If you'd like to look at it,
I'd like to hear your opinion on it.
So I've gone through this. I haven't gone through the entire thing. I mean, I've gone through more of it than four of the other boards of supervisors have. I'll tell you that much. Because I have looked at it, but I mean, there's areas in here that I've almost doubled in size and doubled in, it was rubber stamped. It was 10 minutes. Oh, yeah, everything's fine. Yeah, we have $600 million budgets. It looks good to me. We're fine. So we just rubber stamp the thing, and it's like, you know, and I'm not saying that I wouldn't have passed this. I'm not saying that, hey, maybe every single one of these departments that went up a tremendous amount, I might have said, okay, you've convinced me that that's necessary, and I may have approved it. I don't know. But I guarantee I would have been asking questions. I guarantee I would have been bringing these department heads in and said, okay, you've submitted your budget. Explain to me why you need an increase. What are you going to do? What weren't you able to accomplish last time? What can you do now? You know, the one I use it just kind of stands out to me. And again, I don't know. There may be a very legitimate reason for this. So I may have ended up approving this once it was explained to me. I don't know. But probation juvenile rehabilitation facility, juvenile hall basically, went from $3.64 million to $5.38 million. I mean, a $2.5 million increase, almost doubled the budget. And it's like, and this is just rubber stamped. Nobody's going to ask a question on this. Nobody's going to see why is this the case. So
was that based from a zero-based balance, or did they have something, did it show there that they had something in the kitty already?
So 2019-2020 budget was $3.64,526. The recommended 2021-2022 budget was $5.379,816. Every little area went up. Regular salaries went up by $700,000. Extra help went up. You know, every little area increase. Now, overtime pay went down, but overtime pay is actually, this is an estimated overtime pay. So the actual pay was $200,000, and the estimated is $120,000. Now, more than likely, at the end of this budget, the end of the year, you know, the overtime pay will probably be $220,000 or $300,000, whatever. But, so, you know, even those numbers are kind of misleading because, sure, you know, they have a budget for overtime pay, but they haven't paid it yet, so they don't know what it's actually going to be. So this might actually be $6 million. You know, it might not be 5.38, it might be $6 million. It might be $6.5 million if they have overruns in other areas. But again, you know, and I'm not saying this might be legitimate. Maybe they have an excuse. Maybe they had to, you know, update all the beds or put in new air conditioners or something. I don't know, but I'm going to want the department heads to come in and explain to me before I give him an extra $2 million that he didn't have last year. You're going to have to explain that to me. Let me know what the reason is. So, you know, this rubber stamping thing was just, I don't know. That was just kind of shows the problem in the swamp. You know,
sure,
this is other people's money. I have a problem spending other people's money.
Yes.
You know, now, this particular budget is my money, okay? Because, I mean, and part of it will be my money, you know, next time, too. But, I mean, yeah, it's our money. I have a problem spending somebody else's money. I have a problem spending my own money. Not that there's much left after everything's taken out of it. But, I mean, you know, I'm going to, when I spend money on behalf of somebody else, and it's somebody else's money, I'm going to make darn sure that it's being spent wisely.
Anyway, Wynn, how are you, brother?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm doing good, man.
Good, good.
I know that you've talked, Wynn, a lot about the forensic audits.
Right.
And maybe you want to direct some questions to
Chris.
Well,
that's what I was going to ask.
Yes.
You know, when you guys came up for air, I was going to ask about that. So what do you think about doing forensic audit on the entire budget and every single department?
I'm all for it. I mean, absolutely all for it.
Even if it costs, say, oh, I don't know, $5 or $6 million, what do you think?
Well, I mean, $5 or $6 million, again, I have a problem spending other people's money, but you know, if we're not going to find out where the money's going ourselves as Board of Supervisors, mm-hmm, then, and if they don't care, mm-hmm, and if they're going to rubber stamp a $600 million budget, well then, yeah, $5 million doesn't really seem like that much. I mean,
especially after it's a $600 million budget. So
correct.
You're talking 1%.
Yeah. Yeah.
So 1% to figure out where the other 100% is going.
Yeah.
Or 99% is going. That would be a no-brainer in my mind.
Yep.
I'm assuming that you think the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and again, I wish that we didn't have to have a forensic audit. I wish that it was more transparent where, you know, you could look at things and go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. We know why that happened. Yeah, I understand. He explained that to me. I understand. Yeah, this is this way, you know. I'd brought up before baseline budgeting. I mean, I don't know if there's a way to get away from that. I'm definitely open for suggestions, and I would love to get away from it. I mean, I guarantee there's nobody in this room that at the end of the year goes, oh, hey, we have $10,000 left. We need to go blow that because we're not going to get it next year.
Yeah,
it doesn't work that way.
On the AB-109 money, probation had $1.5 million left. $1.5 million. And they were getting about 60% of the AB-109 money, probation was. That's a whole different animal right there, and the county has control over that, you know.
Also, what about, you know, there are always strings attached from California to the county.
Every time.
So what about cutting some of those strings?
No.
It's going to affect the budget, but guess what? It'll be cleaner, it'll be more manageable, and the county won't be obligated to do some horrific thing that the state dreams up that we absolutely have to do because we're their puppet.
Right now we had our current supervisor in District 5 was going to bring a couple $1 million down to Cottonwood, and he was very proud of that, you know, because he was going to get this state grant, and boy, he hasn't done a whole lot for Cottonwood, so he's going to bring this in there, and it's going to be great. And it was to put in bike lanes and street lights. We don't want bike lanes and
in Cottonwood.
In Cottonwood, exactly.
Where you can ride your horse down the street.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing. Yeah. Then they wanted to take down the sidewalks on Front Street, which the sidewalks still have horse rings in them. They're high sidewalks to tie your horse to.
Right.
You know, they've been there 100+ years.
Yep.
And they want to tear those down and then put in bike lanes and street lights. Well, we don't want that. Well, and I'm thinking, I don't know, what are the ramifications? If I was a district 5 supervisor, I'd say, we'll take that grant money, sure. And then go ahead and fill in some potholes and repave a road or two and say, sorry, we were going to put in bike lanes, but we changed our mind.
Yeah.
You know, are they going to take the money back from us? What are they going to do? It's our money. It's our money they're giving back to us. So, you know, if you want to give me money with strings attached, that's cool. But when I get that money, those strings are going to be cut, and, you know, we'll see how long
it goes. If they're worried about beautification, why don't they just shine and buff the tie rings that are there bolted into the concrete?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, if I mean, that's what they're looking at.
If you've been to Cottonwood, so down Main Street, we have some really cool, I mean, artwork. Yeah. There's horses and cows and cowboys roping, you know, steers, and, I mean, it's very cool. And those are all privately funded. Those are all taken over by, you know, I'm on the Chamber of Commerce down there. So we had a group that would take care of that, and then they turned that over to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a median, you know, repair group or beautification group. And there's different businesses in there that have gotten those and adopted them. And then they take care of them. They take the weeds. They cut down the weeds. They spray. They, you know, do whatever. And then as a chamber, we're talking about, you know, putting in gravel and you know, kind of making them nicer. And then we want to have contests, you know, and whoever's business owns that particular median, let's decorate it for the 4th of July or the Mother's Day rodeo or Christmas or whatever. So, you know, but that's all privately funded. That does make the Cottonwood beautiful, and it has nothing to do with the state.
That's right.
You know, if it was the state, it would probably be palm trees and more street lights and another bike lane or something. But,
exactly.
You know, that's not Cottonwood.
It'd be down to one lane on each side.
Yeah.
Now, getting back to the jail, and a lot of people have been talking. I know the sheriff has made noises. Our third sheriff.
Yeah.
In one term, has made noises. Our second unelected sheriff appointed. And also some of the people, we had a debate at the church over on Bonnyview.
Forum.
It was a forum, you're right.
It was a forum. It wasn't a debate.
Well, I'm glad you're here because you straightened us out on two things. Anyway, so the forum that we had, some of the candidates had mentioned that they were for either homes for the homeless or the center that would give us, you know, some rehabilitation, all that good stuff. And that was Measure A, which didn't pass because it was more taxpayer money. Do you really think that the people of Shasta County are ready for another tax?
You know, Ronald Reagan said, it's not a revenue problem, it's a spending problem. And I fully believe that. I think, I mean, I know I personally pay plenty of taxes. And $600 million budget, you can't find a couple million dollars in there to maybe put towards a jail. You turn down a $30 million grant. You know, there's money available out there. So I am absolutely against a tax increase. Now, I was called, when they were doing Measure A, I was called by a couple different people on Anderson City Council who are friends of mine, who I like, And, you know, they tried to convince me, one very hard tried to convince me to, go for Measure A. And he says, you know, a lot of people, you can convince them to go for Measure A. And I told him, I said, listen, you did in Anderson exactly what you said. They had a quarter cent tax increase in Anderson for law enforcement. I said, you did with that money exactly right. What you said you're going to do with it.
Exactly.
I said, you have integrity on the Anderson City Council. Mm-hmm. There is no integrity in the Board of Supervisors at that time, and there is no integrity on the Reading City Council. I said, you're asking the taxpayers to give you them more money, and they don't trust them. I said, I just told him, I said, I'll be honest with you. I voted against the tax increase you had in Anderson. I said, I did not want that tax increase in Anderson. And for a short time, I had the ability to, whether I'd take my lunch in Anderson, take my lunch in Reading, I would take my lunch in Reading because I didn't want to pay the extra quarter cent tax, which I know is a ridiculously small amount, but it was just my personal agenda. But once I saw that you guys did exactly with that money what you said you were going to do with it, guess what? I started having my lunch at Anderson because you did have integrity and you did do the right thing. And I didn't mind paying the extra 2 or 3 cents on a Happy Meal or whatever it was, you know. So, but I was absolutely against Measure A, still absolutely against Measure A. Let's find out where our money's going. Let's find out what money's available. Let's stop turning down money from the state. And let's get on building a new jail or increasing the size of the jail we have, whatever is the cheapest solution. You know, we have a lot of open buildings in this town, you know, where you could put some bars on the windows and have a holding facility. I mean,
yeah. You know, well, if we did build a new jail or we, as you say, increase the size of the present one and got some more beds, et cetera, couldn't we have the same type of rehabilitation center in the jail itself and just... And have that just be part of the jail, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that
why
goes,
do we have to have a whole center? You
and
know?
That goes to those 30-day sentences that end up cleaning the drugs out of somebody's system, and maybe then, with a clear mind, that we can get them some help. You know, right now, they break into a house, break into a car, shoplift, do whatever. Any crime under $950 is a misdemeanor.
Yeah.
Now. You know, break into a house and steal a $900 gun,
yeah.
And you're not going to jail.
Yeah.
You know? So right now there is no punishment that nobody's being held. So, you know, if you're stealing to support your drug habit, you're not getting arrested. So there's no chance of you getting those drugs out of your system. So you're just being released to go do another crime, and it's over and over and over again. And that needs to stop.
Yeah, it, you're right. And I think that also there's been a comment by local police and the sheriff's department that there's around 300 repeat criminals that keep doing
over and over again,
and if we could put them away, and also there we could send them out to other counties that have beds open, and some do.
Yep.
And so, you know, maybe if we did something like that, we could decrease and even help the homeless and those that are using the drugs, at least reduce the drugs.
Yeah.
I mean, I think a lot of people use that out of depression, you know.
Well, and somebody even, you know, looked into housing our prisoners, our felons that should be in prison, housing them in another state, in other state facilities. There's cheaper beds out there across the country. I mean, these guys are supposed to be in our state prisons and they're in our jail. Well, you know, there was talk and people were looking into, could we take those prisoners that should be in prison and send them to another prison in another state, pay for their beds? We're getting reimbursed from the state for those beds. Let's go ahead and keep getting reimbursed from our state, but send them to another state. Send them out of state to a different prison. And the prison guards union, you know, leadership was very against it. And it's kind of like, you know, we need to sit down and talk with them. It's like nobody's going to get laid off. You're not going to lose any jobs. The jail beds, the beds are still going to be filled, except they're going to be filled with our local problems, not our state problems. You know, but those yeah. things, you know, a lot of people will jump to a conclusion and think, oh, they're trying to get rid of our prisoners. Everybody's going to get laid off. No, there's still going to be plenty of need for a jail. All the time, unfortunately. You know, it's too bad, but it's the way it is. Anybody that thinks differently is, you know, too emotional on the subject.
Well, I think that what we're going to do here, we're with Chris Kallstrom, who's running for supervisor in District 5 here in Shasta County. So I think what we're going to do right now is we'll go off to our break, and then when we come back, we'll pick it up on the other side with Chris Kallstrom. Time has come.
For 51.
Let's get it done.
Amen.
Couldn't KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com. Join Sue McClain weekday mornings from 6 to 7 for the Sue McClain News Hour, where you'll hear the up-to-the-minute local news, national and international news, weather, sports, and a whole lot more. Followed by Free Fire Radio from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with Carl and Linda Bach. From 9 to noon, be informed and laugh along with Armstrong and Getty, equal opportunity critics. From noon to 3, learn how to get out of debt with Dave Ramsey. From 3 to 6, don't miss constitutional expert Mark Levin. Monday through Thursday nights, starting at 6 p.m., we have local shows featuring everything from the paranormal, local history, North State Now, and unsung heroes of our area. From 7 to 9, tune in to Ben Shapiro, your local downtown radio station, KCNR 96.5 FM, AM 1460, and online at kcnr1460.com.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month, starting at 8 a.m., for the Gorman Law Hour, featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Stay right there, Travis.
There we go. We're good.
So that's your country western style, boy.
I like that music a lot.
Yeah, that was fun. Yeah, exactly. Hey, Chris, last night
there
was an event down in District 5, Anderson.
There was, yes. It wasn't necessarily a District 5 event, but it was in District 5. Yes,
right.
The VFW in Anderson, 1320 West Center Street.
Yep. It was our Heroes Dreams project event.
Great project. Great idea. I mean, it's the... several wounded vets there, running thing, and they're trying to stop this 22 a day.
Yep.
You know, 22 veterans a day are taking their own lives. Great organization. They actually were mentioned in George Bush's book, mm-hmm. and then they just went crazy after that. I mean, it's just huge. So Gary Sinise actually does a lot of auctioneering for them and stuff, and does their things. And George Bush has been there at a couple of other events, so. What they try to do is they try to bring in veterans that are having a hard time and first responders that are having a hard time with, you know, PTSD or whatever the case may be, maybe drinking too much or trying to, you know, find, solitude and, you know, substances, whatever. And they try to bring these guys in and they just work with them and they talk to them about, you know, I mean, maybe their house needs a repair. Maybe their car's broken down. Maybe they've lost their job. Maybe their wife's left, whatever the case may be. And they sit them down and talk to them as people and try to work on their lives and what's going on and helping them there. And then they also bring them to these retreats where they'll have a Vietnam veteran, you know, who's 70 years old and talking to a kid that came back from Iraq that doesn't think anybody understands what he's going through, you know, and then they sit around the campfire and these guys realize, these guys know what I'm going through. They've been through it too. Mm-hmm. And so, it's an unbelievable organization. And they just got the ranch up there in Whitmore.
Yep.
Where Friday the 13th was originally filmed back in the day.
Yep.
But there's a bunch of little cabins up there. And I mean, I guess there's basketball courts and, you know, fishing ponds and, I mean, all sorts of stuff. So it's a, I think he said $25 million ranch that was donated to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, they plan on, so this is going to be basically the hub. Our county is going to be the hub of this entire organization, which is a huge organization and getting bigger every day. So.
And also too, one of the things too is that they were talking about as the vets or the former first responders, as they start going through the recovery process and they're getting better and they're doing well, they're going to help them with business plans.
Yeah.
Because if they want to be a business owner or whatever, they offered that too, that they have business plan programs that they would show them how to do a business plan and they would work with them from start to finish until execution of their business and getting things up and running. And sometimes they are able to get donations so that they can donate everything to get the business going.
Yeah.
That just floored me. It's like, holy cow,
yeah,
that's awesome.
I think we sold 6 flags last night. So they have these hand-carved wooden flags that are really, really cool. And they sold them $1,500 a piece.
Nice. Yep.
And I think we sold all the flags, and we might have even had a couple that weren't done yet that'll be done in the future. But we sold them out, and that $1,500 goes to getting one of these veterans or first responders a plan to get a business started, to get them back on their feet and do something. So, and they have like 25 different businesses that they can teach themselves, different trades. But if there's something else you want to do, they will find you the ability to start that and do
very
that.
Cool.
So, it's a very cool organization. Yeah.
And it was really well responded to with the people in the room, because, you know, obviously they're there because in support of first responders and vets and what have you. But it was really cool to see how they work together.
Yeah.
It was awesome because we were there just to, like from mine and Linda's perspective, because we always do the bank, you know, that's what we do. Well, we started doing it, and then the wives of these vets came over, and so they're going to learn to, we taught them how to do the part that we always do.
Yeah.
So in future events, they're able to do that, and that's what you have to do. And they hit the ground running, and they didn't look back. They were just on it. They knew what to do. And every once in a while, they might have one little question, but it was just real minor stuff, which was good. And they were able to – they did the whole thing. And then their kids, they incorporated their kids into, you know, being the runners and the flaggers and stuff like that. It was awesome to see that whole process coming together and everybody in the room. And I can't remember the gentleman's name that read about the table last night.
You know,
I'm so sorry. I apologize for that.
Justin was the one did a lot of it. He didn't do the speaking though, and I want to say it was Jim, but I'm not sure.
Oh my gosh, reading about the memorial table.
Yeah,
and he recited that.
Yeah,
it wasn't anything that he read. I mean, it went on for a bit, and it was beautiful.
Yeah,
I had never heard that before, and oh my gosh, that should be listened to in every classroom. From, say, third grade on.
He said he was reading it, but I was watching him, and I didn't see his eyes look down at that paper, but maybe one or two times. So, he said he was reading it, but he's done it a few times, and he was reciting it.
Yeah,
you know?
The table was set for the missing.
Yeah.
And it goes through this whole scenario, and it was just absolutely beautiful.
And he told his stories about, I mean, himself. He lost both of his knees got shot through, and he was wounded, and I think it was in Iraq. They used one of the private contractors as a human shield. So they're holding this guy up, and they're shooting at him, and he can't shoot back because they're holding this guy in front of him. I mean, the stories were incredible.
Yeah.
And they ended up capturing that guy, and he was the longest-held prisoner in the history of Afghanistan and Iraq. He was held for 11 years.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they beheaded him. So that guy never made it back home, this private contractor. Wow. And another one of his friends, I believe, was killed. They had 2 friends on either side of him that were killed. I mean, it was horrific. You know, I mean, it's like... You see the stories on the news, you know, well, you know, four people were wounded yesterday in Iraq. Well, you have no idea what the, you know, what that means.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and so he's telling the stories, and it was pretty rough. I mean, it was pretty emotional. It was, you know, pretty amazing. But, I mean, and he, boy, talk about a good outlook in life. You know, this guy he's there to help everybody else. He's, you know, he was able to save one leg. They told him he was going to lose both legs, and he said, well, we'll see about that, you know. So he lost one, but he has the other one, and he gets around pretty darn good.
He does well,
you know. And boy, what a cheery disposition for a guy that's been through what he's been through, you know.
So, and that's what this is all about. You know, that's what this whole program is all about, is helping others that have gone through that so they can come out on the other side and, and be better for it, stronger for it, and move on.
And know? That's what we were there for. We were there to just show them what we do. I mean, we do this quite often.
Yeah.
We've been doing it all really often. In fact, if some of the listeners are listening from Auburn, Grass Valley area, you know Wynn and I, because we were down there, Thursday before last. Doing a fundraiser for there. They're having some problems in Nevada County, even though we were in Placer County doing the fundraiser. That was where the venue was. Placer County people were down, Nevada County people were down there. Mm-hmm. They're having problems with their leaders, their supervisors, and they want to know what Shasta County is doing. Shasta County really is the spear of the, you know, the tip of the spear. Yep. I mean, we're showing other counties, you know, predates the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence. You know, if your government, it's time to abolish your government.
It's all the way back to 1100 AD.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, and we're doing that. We have the right, that we have the power, that we the people have the power. And we the people here in Shasta County are taking control of that power.
Yeah, I think that is such a great point. Again, we talk about, you know, how supervisors, when you do a recall like we did, the only people that actually can vote in the recall are the people in that particular district. Yet, like we spoke before earlier, 20% of what any supervisor does affects you no matter what district you're in. And talking about districting, you wanted to talk about the redistricting of what's going on there. We'd like to hear your take on that.
Yeah, because of the 2020 census, so the numbers came out. They were late getting back, but we got the new numbers. So District 5 has grown in population. District 2 has shrunk in population, car fire and some of the other fires and people moving out and just the way things go. So District 5 needs to be cut, and District 2 needs to have people added to them. So at one point, the commission came up with a solution. They were actually going to cut half of Cottonwood off and put them in with Happy Valley. And fortunately, the existing supervisors know Cottonwood well enough to know that we're a pretty tight-knit community.
Sure.
And we don't consider any part of us to be Happy Valley. Not that there's anything wrong with Happy Valley. We love those people too, but we are distinct communities. So they wanted to cut, at the end of Gas Point Road, they wanted to just cut all those people off and throw them over into District 2. And fortunately, Les Baugh, you know, that's his district. I mean, he knows Cottonwood well enough to know that those people do not want to be taken out of Cottonwood. And it was all done because of a political line where they would have to make another ballot because, you know, there's so many districts that come into play. There's fire districts and school districts. And, I mean, there's so many things that come into play. So when you start moving lines, you move this line into this fire district. Well, then that affects the school district. And, you know, so it's a tough job. They came up with two different solutions, and one of the solutions was to cut Cottonwood in half. That solution I don't think is going to go through. It looks like District 5 will probably lose part of Rancho Road. Kind of the southern part of Rancho Road will stay in, but the other half, the northern part, is going to go into District 3, and then District 3 will take some stuff into District 2. So it's a complicated process. I personally would just soon not lose anybody, but, you know, we have too many people in our district, so it is what it is. But either way, I'm going to run for District 5, whether it's part of Rancho Road's in there or part of Cottonwood's cut off. I certainly hope part of Cottonwood isn't cut off. But District 5 goes Cottonwood, Anderson, Shingletown, a very small part of far eastern Palisadro, end of, like, Silverbridge Road, part of that, and then into Millville. So it goes up the road, Millville, up into Shingletown. There was talk about moving Millville into the Round Mountain District, into District 3. There was one lady that spoke there that said, hey, they kind of consider themselves to be more Round Mountain Oak Run area more than they consider themselves to be Anderson Cottonwood, which, you know, is legitimate. I mean, I can see that. But then, you know, they go on up into Shingletown. So my district will be Shingletown, Anderson, Cottonwood, basically the three biggest parts of it. So
one of the questions that people have asked us, the Second Amendment is such a big deal right now. I mean, it always should be, always has been. Now, where do you stand on the Second Amendment, and where do you stand as far as CCWs, open carry permits, et cetera? What's your take on all that?
So the Second Amendment protects all the rest, in my opinion. I mean, I'm a lifetime member of the NRA. You know, at one point in my young political career, I was a one-item voter. It was one-subject voter, and it was the Second Amendment. you know, I did not vote for Dan Lundgren. I did not vote for Gray Davis either. They both had Fs in the NRA, so I voted for the Libertarian that year because they were at least supportive of the Second Amendment. Definitely a Second Amendment supporter. Concealed carry, I mean, I think it, personally it's, it shall not be infringed is pretty simple. I mean, it's pretty simple. It doesn't say shall not be infringed, but you need to get a permit for this and a permit for that.
A privilege.
A background check for this. I mean, it shall not be infringed is shall not be infringed. So, yeah, I definitely support concealed carry, and I think we do a pretty good job of that in Shasta County. It could be a better job. You know, personally, it may be radical, but I'm not even sure if you need a permit to be concealed carry. There's some states where you don't have to have a permit to conceal
35
carry.
35 of them.
Right. Now, open carry, people get confused with open carry. People think open carry, we're going to go back to 1864, and everybody's going to walk down the street with a six-shooter on their hip and go into Walmart and go into McDonald's. That is not necessarily open carry. Open carry is my grandfather back in the 70s and 80s that used to have the rifle rack in the back window of his pickup truck. You know, and every rancher and every farmer in this entire county had a rifle rack in the back window of their pickup truck with a 22 or a 12 gauge or whatever was back there. Everybody had them. I mean, heck, we used to go to the schools. You know, you used to go in the parking lot of the high school and see.
I did that when I was in high school. Yep.
Yeah, see gun racks in the back of pickup trucks. We didn't have school shootings back then either. So.
And there were guns left in there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when I was in high school in a very rural, well, I grew up in MacArthur, and Fall River High School, which is in MacArthur, you drive through that little parking lot there, and 90% of the pickups had gun racks, and of that 90%, I would say at least 50% had a gun sitting in it.
Yeah, so open carry, again, there's kind of a misnomer. It's like everything else. It's been, you know, said that, oh, that means everybody's going to be wearing a six-shooter on their hip, and we're going to have gunfights in the streets and this and that. And
no, not happening.
It's almost exclusive in California. 45 of the 50 states have open carry. 35 of the 50 states, you can simply walk in, buy a gun, you know, they'll do a quick little check on you, 5 to 10 minutes, you put the gun on your hip and you walk out the door. This seems to be a pretty exclusive thing. Now, you mentioned the thing about concealed carry. Concealed carry, renewals now are backed up a minimum of 4 months.
And you have to apply within a month of your expiration. So there's a huge problem there, yeah.
Yep.
Excuse me, there's a huge problem where, you know, people are applying a month out and then they're having a 3 month backlog. So, you know, they're either expired for 2 months. So that needs to be cleaned up. I mean, that absolutely needs to be cleaned up. I know Tom Basenko's excuse used to be there was only one guy down in Sacramento run their fingerprints. Well, you know, guess what? If we've jumped through all of our hoops and we've done everything we're supposed to do and you can't get your job done, well, then as far as I'm concerned, you pass because we didn't hear anything different. I mean, that's my outlook.
Well, we had some people that did were pretty vocal about that, and they called into several different radio programs. And one gentleman in particular, I mean, he has had his concealed carry permit for probably longer than some people have been alive, and he was going to get his renewal. He's out 4 months. He was told it could be another 3 months. And he said, well, I'm going to conceal carry anyway. And he was told on the phone by the sheriff's department that if he was caught, he'd be arrested.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And then he would never be able to carry again.
Yes.
So they're making you a criminal from the get-go when you're being compliant with the damn paperwork.
Excuse me, that seems to kind of be a pattern here. I mean, they make you a criminal all the time anyways.
Yep.
You know, I mean, so I can't hunt with my old lead shotgun shells anymore. I can't hunt with my old lead bullets anymore because now they've outlawed that in California. You have to go to, you know.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, and then I have to pass a background check. And that background check is only going to get tougher.
Right.
When you buy bullets, because right now, I can go in there. I've bought a gun in the last 2 years, 3 years. I'm in the system, whatever it is. So I can go in there and buy ammunition. If you haven't bought a gun, then you need to take down one of your guns and go through the process so that you are now in the system, which, you know, is ridiculous. But it's going to get to the point where, okay, you know, Chris Kellstrom, we know that you have a 22 because you bought 22 shells, but now you're buying 6.5 Creedmoor shells. You know, we don't have a record of you having actually, my 6.5 Creedmoors are both registered, but, you know, we don't have a record of this particular gun that you inherited from your grandfather. You can't buy the ammunition for it unless you take that gun down here and register it.
Under, right.
You know, and then this is the kind of thing that's going to go on. And you give them an inch and they take a mile every single time. And that's why I'm against chipping away any chips whatsoever. I'm absolutely against it. I mean, when they banned the 50 caliber BMGs, it's like, okay, I didn't have a 50 caliber BMG. I shot one time. They're amazing. You know, $20 a shot. But there's something else. But I mean, you know, they were never involved in a crime. There's not one single crime. I mean, the guns cost you $5,000, and it cost you $20 a shell to shoot it. You're not carrying it around doing a drive-by shooting with it.
You're not wasting it.
And you're not holding up a liquor store. I mean, the things weigh about 45 pounds. So there is never crime committed with one, but they banned them anyways because they're scary looking and there's really no need. And the rest of the gun owners didn't stand up as they should have because, you know, it's such a small minority that had 50 caliber BMGs that were like, well, I don't have one, so, yeah, you know, whatever. Yeah. We'll kind of lay over on this one, let them get away. Well, you give them an inch, they take a mile.
So. Well, you know, in Shasta County, because even in the state of California, a sheriff can issue a 26-150B2 open carry as long as the county is under 200,000. We're around 185,000. So he could issue those open carry permits. When I had applied for one of those and asked Tom Basenko about it, he told me that it would make his officers nervous, and I reminded him that that might be a training issue. And I said, you know, does it matter where you carry it? When you take these classes for concealed carry, it really is the discernment of when you use the weapon, not so much where you carry the weapon, but when you use it. And he said that he thought that concealed carry was tactically superior to open carry. And I said, really? I said, then why do your officers open carry? And he says, is it a deterrent? I said, well, shouldn't your employers, the people, have the same particular right that their employees do? So, you know, I don't know how far the Board of Supervisors would want to push that. I know that the California Rifle and Pistol Association did, in fact, put forth a resolution that has some of those things in there. Have you read that or seen that?
I've seen it. Yeah, I haven't read the whole thing. I have seen it, and I'm aware of it, and I believe that it was voted down. They didn't even want to talk about it.
Yeah.
They didn't want to put it on there, you know, which doesn't surprise me. I mean, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of courage to represent the people. And again, that gets back to representation issue. You know, are the constituents for it? I guarantee Cotton would be all for it. You know, there's not too many people in Cottonwood that'd be against it. You know, so if that were to come up in my district, I mean, you know, and if I found out that the entire city of Anderson was absolutely against it and 100% of them were absolutely against it, well, then, okay, that might have to change my vote. You know, because, again, I'm a representative. I'm going to represent what the people want. What Chris Kellstrom wants is I think open carry is fine. I want to have a gun rack in the back window of my pickup again. Not today in this day and age in Reading, because they'd all get stolen in the first 5 minutes that I drove anywhere. But, you know, I'm for it. I'm pro Second Amendment. I would be for open carry. I would not have a problem. But as a supervisor, you are an elected representative. So I would find out what the constituents wanted and represent them in that way.
Now, you had mentioned earlier in the program that you felt that crime was really the number one issue. That what do you think is maybe your number two? What is the thing that you think we really need to start working on, and what would be a solution to that particular problem?
Well, I think one of the first things I want to do, and this might not be the number one issue, but certainly the first thing I would want to do is I would motion to have these meetings held on Wednesday nights, you know, or whatever night would be most convenient. But I think Wednesday night would be convenient. City of Reading, City of Anderson have their city council meetings on Tuesdays. So I think Wednesday would probably be the best time to have a meeting, but I would move these meetings to the evenings. This is ridiculous that we're having the meetings in the middle of the day when 90% of the people can't get them, you know, can't get to them. Les Baugh, 4 years ago, he was promising jail beds everywhere down in Cottonwood. He was telling he had jail beds coming out of his ears. He had 40 here and 50 here and 90 here and 100 here and all these other jail beds everywhere because, of course, that was the number one concern 4 years ago. Everybody wanted to know where the jail beds were, and he had a plan. And, you know, you had to vote for him because none of them were going to be ready before the election. But trust him, you had to vote for him, and he's going to have all these jail beds. Well, I called him out on it. He got a little angry, and he told me, well, if I were to come to the meetings, then I would understand what he's been doing. And I said, well, that's another thing. I said, you have your meetings at 10 o'clock in the morning. I said, I work for a living. I said, I'm the guy out there you're taking all the taxes from, paying for everything. And I said, I can't go to your meetings because you hold them when I can't be there. And he, you know, like I said, I could watch him on podcasts then and whatever. And it's like, so that's the first thing I would like to do is move those meetings to Wednesday nights or whatever night the constituents want. I think Wednesday would probably be the best. Thursday might be better. I don't know. But whatever night they want, most people could be there. We want to move those meetings to the evenings so that we, the people, can show up and voice our concerns and voice our opinions. I would also like to do a little bit of a reporting issue at every county counter that deals with the public. And, you know, this isn't necessarily a got you. I have never firsthand experienced anything negative in the planning department or the building department. I have heard plenty of stories. So I can't speak firsthand that there is an issue there that I'm aware of because it happened to me. But I've yet to hear a story that, hey, this was great. They treated me wonderfully. And, you know, man, they made it so easy for me. Now, I will say this. Again, it's not just necessarily a got you thing. I did experience the records department. I had to get a birth certificate. So it was COVID, and I had to go online and fill out the papers and pay the fee and all this other stuff, and then I had to go down there to pick it up. So I go down there to that counter to pick it up at the county, and the woman that was helping me was, I mean, friendly and nice, treated me as a customer, was helpful, knowledgeable. She was fantastic. The next girl over at the window recognized my last name, and, you know, Kellstrom not being a total common name. Her dad and my dad used to be friends. They both passed on, so her and I start talking about our dads, and, I mean, I walked out of there just, I mean, it was a great experience. Had I had a QR code or an 800 number or the bottom of my receipt had a website, hey, go here and tell us how your experience was, I would have gladly told how wonderful these ladies were. Now, I had to go back there to that department to get my boy's birth certificate. So went through the process again, went in there, got a different lady. And I was a little bit disappointed at first because I'm thinking, well, I wish I got that lady over there. She was so nice last time, but I get a third lady. And same thing, knowledgeable, expedient, friendly. I mean, she was as good an experience as the other two. I mean, she was fantastic, you know. So again, I would have loved, bottom of that receipt said, hey, go here and, you know, fill out this questionnaire. How'd you do? I would have gladly said, hey, you know, these people, you've trained them well, you've hired well, they are doing a fantastic job, they treated me as a customer, you know, they were helpful, keep up the good work, you guys are doing great. You know, and as a board of supervisor, I would want that report going to every board of supervisor and the department head from that department. Mm-hmm. And if we see there's a problem where every single customer and a certain, you know, counter is going and every one of them is just livid and mad when they leave and unbelievable, well, then we need to call that department head and say, hey, you've got a problem. You need to change your culture. You need to train your people better. Now, maybe the problem turns out that it's state regulations and they have no control over them. Well, then that's fine. You need to start explaining that to the customer when they get here. And again, it's a customer. It's not somebody that's a thorn in your side that you want to, you know, right. that you want to take your problems out on. That's a customer. Not only is that a customer, that's a taxpayer, and you're tax funded. So
it's your employer.
It's your employer, and it's a customer. So you better treat them as such. You know, and I think it would change the entire culture around, you know, at the county departments. And again, not every county department is going to need that. The one I experienced, the one I have firsthand experience, keep up the good work. You guys are doing a fantastic job. I haven't looked up their budget numbers. I probably should because whatever it is, you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. You're doing a fantastic job, you know, and I would be more than happy to call that department head and tell them that exact same thing. Keep up the good work. In fact, maybe we should have you train some other people that are having some troubles in their departments because, you know, whatever the case may be. But I would like to do that. I would like to move those meetings to Wednesday nights or whatever night of the week is most available. And I would like to have a reporting mechanism at the county counters that just give us a feedback on how our departments are doing.
How do people find you, and how do they help you if they choose to vote for you or want to get in your camp?
So I've just found out that chriskellstrom.com is a domain that's not taken, so I believe it's taken now. I have somebody work on a website. Don't have the website yet.
Okay.
I do have a campaign phone.
Okay.
So you can reach me at that. I'm going to have to look it up because it's not the phone I use every day. But I know it's area code 530-744. And then from there I get a little lost, so let me find it. Again, this is not a phone I use every day. It will be a phone that I will start using more and more and more as we go along.
So they can leave messages on it and so forth?
Correct. Yeah, okay. I may not answer it. I probably won't answer it.
But you'll call that.
But I will call back. You can leave me a voicemail. So it's 530-744-4539. 744-4539.
Now, we'll be having the other candidates on, too. And as we go on, we may have a little bit tougher questions.
Oh, no, we just have 1 minute left.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, your peripheral isn't working real well.
we're paying attention, Wynn. If you wave your finger at Chris or I, we're paying attention.
No, I was just confirming what Travis was saying.
I was going to call out the bid. I thought Wynn had been again.
Well, I think one of the things that's really refreshing about Chris Kellstrom is the fact that he's one of us. He really, truly is one of us.
Amen.
He's the guy that I know you can sit down, have a cup of coffee with, maybe have a beer with. He's the guy. And I really appreciate you coming on here, Chris. I know that Wynn and I really respect all mm-hmm. the things you said. This man has the budget in front of him with all these postums all over the place, so he's actually doing the work and digging in.
I might leave this with Wynn. Wynn might be interested in looking at this, or do you have a copy?
No, not yet.
Well, you want to take a look at it.
Okay.
There's plenty here to look at.
Yes, and I think it'd be important that Wynn looks at it.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah.
Never know what's going to happen in the future, do we?
Absolutely.
We do not.
I know a couple other people have really dug through this thing, and they found some pretty questionable things.
They have. Anyway, this was Chris Kallstrom running for supervisor, District 5, Shasta County. This is Terry Raposa, Wynn Carpenter, and Travis signing off.
Brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.